Hello, and welcome to the East Anglian Theatre Podcast. Can you believe it? Another new week and another new episode. Just when I think the podcast has probably had its day, I then get a flurry of interest from companies wanting to get involved. And I'm here for it, because I love chatting to people about theatre. But what kind of intro is that? Allow me to introduce myself. My name is Ray Tempesta, and I am the ill-equipped but enthusiastic host of the podcast that takes a peek behind the curtains at productions happening across our region, that region being East Anglia. Now, I'm a Norwich boy, so there is a certain bias towards productions in Norfolk, particularly when it comes to reviewing, simply for logistical reasons, but I'm always happy to feature companies from other counties in East Anglia, such as Suffolk and Cambridgeshire. I may occasionally stretch to Essex now and then too. Now, if you like what you hear and you want to show support for the podcast, you can follow the various social media accounts on Facebook, Instagram, X and TikTok. There's no groundbreaking content on there, but you will find shout-outs for upcoming productions and reviews too. If you fancy it, you can also take a look at my website, eatpod.co.uk. That's eatpod.co.uk. Here you'll find all episodes of the podcast, plus the reviews that I produce and the occasional written interview. Right. That's the dirty work taken care of. Let's move on to the first section, where I ask myself, Ray, what have you been up to in the world of theatre lately? Well, I'm taking a little bit of a break from performing in the short term. This means I don't have rehearsals to attend at the moment, and that's freed up a bit more time to go and see some shows. So I've been particularly productive with reviews of late. One show that I saw but I didn't review was Weird Sisters at Sheringham Little Theatre. Now, it could have been because I have a particular affection for that play, which is a stage adaptation of a Terry Pratchett novel, and perhaps because I'd built it up a bit too much in my head, having not seen it for many years, but I didn't particularly enjoy the version I saw in Sheringham. They had a few great performers playing in some of the lead roles. Particular favourites were two of the three sisters, Magrat and Nanny Ogg. But unfortunately, with a cast of 20-odd, it felt like they'd very much stretched themselves too thin, talent-wise. Poor projection from some cast members, slow pacing, and many missed opportunities to draw humour from a very funny script meant this was a bit of a slog, to be honest. Anyway, another show that I saw was earlier this week, on the 2nd of April, and I went along to Norwich Theatre Royal to provide a review of the Calendar Girls musical. Now, you can read my thoughts in full on my website, eatpod.co.uk, but as I admitted in the review, it probably wasn't ideal to go in with a preconception of how I might feel about a production, but being a fan of Calendar Girls, both on screen and on stage, I wasn't sure about the need for a musical version, so I attended this production hoping to have my mind changed. Thankfully, this rendering of the story did manage to retain all the charm, humour and poignancy that made the film and stage versions such big hits, and it was enjoyable to watch. I do feel like they'd sacrificed a fair bit of the narrative of the originals in order to crowbar the songs into the show, and the songs themselves, while well performed by the actors, were really not that great or memorable. With no ensemble, the musical numbers also felt a bit sparse, especially as there's no choreography whatsoever, so the songs did underwhelm a little. Now, by the time this episode goes out, Calendar Girls will have finished in Norwich, and the UK tour actually concludes next week in Crawley, so if you didn't catch it this time, you've missed out. However, I have a sneaking suspicion the amateur rights will be released not too long after, so there may well be a host of opportunities to either see it or get involved with a production, perhaps. Watch this space. Anyway, out with the old and in with the new, and just yesterday being Thursday the 4th of April, I had the privilege to watch a whole host of young talent as Echo Youth Theatre produced a spellbinding school's edition of Les Miserables. Now, they are an incredibly talented company, aided by a team of wonderful tutors, and they really shone in a powerful, slimmed-down production of the long-running global smash hit. Again, I've produced a review for that one, which you can read on my website. And if you're quick, you may well be able to pick up a ticket for their remaining shows. It is well worth it. Visit echoyouththeatre.co.uk for more details. Next week, I'll be going along to review a production of Jesus Christ Superstar in Norwich, and a brand new show called Richard, My Richard, at the Theatre Royal, Bury St Edmunds. So do keep an eye out for those reviews, and if you happen to see the shows yourself, why not let me know what you thought? But enough about me, what about you guys? What have you been up to? Any shows you've seen lately that have impressed you? Do let me know, I'm always happy to hear from you. Okay, so let's move on to the reason that you're really here. The interview. And this time, I'd like to introduce you to two creatives, one who has written a time-travelling ghostly mystery show to be performed by a company in Cambridge, and also the director of that show. Their names are Sean Lang and Sarah Ingram, and to one degree or another, they're involved in bringing the next production from the combined actors of Cambridge to the stage at the ADC Theatre. So, without further ado, let's listen to my chat with them, shall we? Hi there, everyone. I'm here with Sean Lang and Sarah Ingram, writer and director, respectively, of the latest production from the combined actors of Cambridge. It's lovely to meet you both. Are you both well?
Very well, yep.
Yes, thank you.
Well, now we're nearing the opening of the production, which is called The Ghostly Gift of Miss Constance Cooper. Are you guys ready for it to be seen?
Well, I am, and I don't have to do the directing.
It is one ever ready. Yes, we had an absolutely superb rehearsal last night. And we will be ready, definitely.
Yeah. And for you, Sean, as the writer, I should imagine it's been in development for a little while.
The story is based on a most bizarre, intriguing true story which took place back in the 1900s. And I first read about this when I was a kid. I can remember reading about it in one of those sort of knowledge magazines they used to produce for children back in my young days. And it's two eminently respectable English ladies, the principal and the vice principal of an Oxford college for women, who in 1900 were, in fact, they met up in Paris. And they went out to Versailles. And then about 10 years later, they wrote a book in which they claimed that on that day, they had travelled back in time to the 18th century, to the time of the French Revolution, and had seen 18th century people and had seen Queen Marie Antoinette herself. And they wrote this all up in a book. And it was actually widely believed for a very long time. So that's the origin of the story. And as I say, that's been something I've been carrying around with me in my head, thinking that I can do something with that for years. And about a little bit more than 10 years ago, actually, it was more like about 12 or 13 years ago, I did actually try writing a script, which is basically about them, and which has a story which has been told before, but it wasn't quite right. And I was sort of wanting to go back to it. And I needed a lot of thinking through, because it's a ghost story where it's not quite clear who the ghosts are, because they claimed that they'd seen ghosts of the 18th century, and at the same time they claimed somehow to have gone back to the 18th century, which would have made them ghosts. And so there's a lot to work through. And so, yes, it took a long time. And so I wrote the script as it is about 3 years ago. And Sarah and I took it to Combined and made a pitch. And so it has been a long process. And of course, the writing, in a sense, still goes on even in rehearsal, because they're always sort of fine tuning. And
I was going to ask you about that. I mean, on to rehearsals, obviously, we're looking at this from two different perspectives, really. So as the director, Sarah, do you have a specific process? And for you as the writer, Sean, obviously the script has been entrusted to the company, but have you been involved in the rehearsal room in terms of tweaking?
I've been along to some rehearsals, yep. And there are tweaks in the script. You know, it's what's called dramaturging, which is the fine tuning of a script. For example, when you're writing it, you don't know how it'll be staged. And when you're actually in rehearsal, you can see that the way it's staged means that there's an awkward silence which needs a couple of lines to fit in, that sort of thing. So occasionally you do need to either change a line or add a little bit. More commonly, of course, you have to take things out, because that's fine, because it sort of streamlines it. And you never really know when you're writing until you hear it, until you see it on stage. So, yeah, at about this stage, which is the sort of run through and getting up to the tech and the dress rehearsal, that's when I like to sort of come back in and sort of add anything I might be able to.
from my point of view, I know quite a lot of directors go into the rehearsal period having a very clear idea about how they're going to stage it, what they want it to look and sound like. And I do prep, obviously. I don't want to go into a rehearsal room being completely unprepared, because that's not fair on anybody. But it changes once you see a script on its feet. It changes, and you need to be adaptable and go with the changes. And of course, the actors bring their own thing to it. You know, when you cast, and Sean cast with me, we did it together, and that works really well. So you cast the people you think will bring those characters to life in the best possible way. But then you get into the rehearsal and you discover things. I mean, scripts are magical because you think you know it. You think you know what's on the page, but then you just keep digging, and we're still digging, and we're still finding out about the characters and the story they're in. And you need to let the actors have ownership of their process as well. So yes, and that's why rehearsals are wonderful, because it sounds cheesy, but it's a real process of exploration. It's great having Sean there, because I could turn to him, as I did last night, and say, oh my goodness, we need to do blah 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 in this scene. And I hadn't seen it until I saw it last night, that there was something more we needed to do with a really key scene in the play. So we talked at the rehearsal, then we chatted afterwards on WhatsApp, and great minds think alike. Yeah. And we resolved it together, because we were both thinking in the same way.
The great thing, you see, when you're writing is, of course, you can leave a lot to the director. So I'm a great one for doing that. This happens and sort it out somehow. I mean, there's one bit in the script where in the stage direction, I said, this will be fun for the techies, because I just sort of leave it to them to sort out.
Exactly right. That caused a lot of hilarity at the read-through. Yeah.
But when you write a script and you're working with the director, it's like bringing up they often talk about your script as your baby, and it is a bit like that, because when you're writing it, it's yours, it's your creation, it's all up there and it comes out and what have you. Then you entrust it to the director, and it's the director's vision, and you hope that it marries with yours, which in with Sarah and me, it absolutely does. And then, as Sarah says, you go over to the actors, so it's their vision as well. So you get so the writer's hold, in a sense, is getting less and less with each stage. And then the one which I didn't actually realise till the last show that Sarah and I did, of course, it's the stage manager, because when it comes to performance, the writer isn't backstage, the director isn't backstage. We're both in the stalls watching. The person who actually controls the production is the stage manager. So a piece of theatre writing has many owners, as it were, by the time it's finished.
Yeah. And just moving on to your sort of relationship, both of you with Combined Actors Company, was this piece written specifically for them? And you mentioned you sort of pitched it to them.
Sort of, yes. We had done one before in 2018, which was a Christmas ghost story. I like ghosts. You see, we talk about ghosts. That was, again, a relatively complex, in fact, it was quite a complex one, because there were various sort of intertwining stories, and there was a big sort of historical backstory as well, lots of costume changes and things. So I can't, to be honest, I forget at that stage why it was we went to Combined specifically, but we did, and developed a very good relationship with them. And so when I wrote this one, although I didn't write it specifically for any particular company, but I thought this had got similar challenges. We had a good relationship from before, and I think it's very much a question of mutual trust. So I knew that Sarah would do a good job, and I knew that Combined would do a good job. So, when I talk about entrusting a script to them, that's absolutely right. So I knew that I could trust them to do a good job. And I think, that's it myself. I think they trusted that the quality of the script would be good, because, as I say, we'd worked before. So, I was very happy that Combined took it. And indeed, they have pulled out all the stops. And you see that in the production team and in the publicity and in the sort of commitment to it that it comes across. And that's really very reassuring, but also, very pleasing, because I believed in this script. And then it's great to see other people believing in it as well.
Mm. And hats off to Combined as well for taking a risk with a play that isn't known by a writer who's known locally, but he's not a national treasure. So I just think it's laudable that they have put their faith in this and are willing to produce it.
I'm always in favor of that. As a previously unseen piece, I mean, how do you both anticipate or indeed hope that audiences will react to it?
Well, it's a ghost story. And the original story about the two ladies in Versailles is a sort of intriguing one, but it's not an inherently scary one. So I did something which is counterintuitive, given that you've got two periods of history. You've got their time, which is the sort of 1900s, the suffragette period, if you like. And you've also got the French Revolution period. And normally that's more than enough for an audience to cope with. But what I did was to add a third historical period on, but one which the audience would find a lot easier, which is the 1960s. So it's close enough to our own time to sort of that it doesn't feel quite so alien to us. And that's where the really scary stuff takes place. So, yeah, it is a scary story. There is a very malevolent ghost in it. And that, I think, is what can draw people in, that, you know, everyone enjoys a bit of a thrill. And the posters, which are beautifully designed, sort of do get both the different time periods and the sort of scariness of it. And indeed, the sort of malevolence comes across very well in that one image. So I'm hoping that the idea of a bit of a spine chiller, which works a bit, I mean, it can work at any time of year. And in fact, in some ways, it's even better that it's not in the depths of winter. You know, we're in spring and the sun's out, because in fact, the scariest scene does take place on a beautiful summer's day.
Obviously, the cast themselves haven't seen it before. So how have they been reacting to it in rehearsals?
They're very committed. And I think the premise of the story has intrigued people. So we had quite a lot of actors auditioning for us, and it's an all-female cast, which is wonderful. More of that, please, in Cambridge, because we have some fantastic women performing in Cambridge and they need more to do. And I think because the story is so intriguing, and the fact that it's over three time periods and it's a twisty play, so you really have to have your brain engaged when you're watching it and when you're performing it. Because it weaves in and out. It's not, you know, it's not a linear play. It's jumbled up. So you really have to think. And I think the actors have engaged with the challenge. The characters are wonderful. When I read it out loud, because as a sometime actor myself, I really wanted to play them all. So, you know, they're not all the same size, but they all are important. They're full of personality, which might sound odd when you're talking about stage characters, but sometimes they're not. And I think the fact that it is a new play, and that Sean comes to rehearsals, so he's another audience to please in a way, has really, it just engaged their commitment and passion. And rehearsals have just been hard work, a lot of fun. Mm. And everybody's bonded. It's a sort of play where you have to bond as a company to make it work. And that has really happened.
I've certainly felt that in rehearsals. You know, you can tell when you go into a room, you know, what the feel is. And there's a very, very good vibe among the cast there. And I think the fact that it is an all-women cast, and it's quite a large cast as well, there are 13, you know, with a little bit of doubling. And I think that is important, because you get plays which have only got one or two women characters, and even if it's a strong character, nevertheless, it's only one or two, whereas this one's got quite a range of, you know, there's a real range of different types. And I like writing for women, actually, and so I was really pleased. I did consider having one token male character. In rather as many plays have one token woman, I thought there's a sort of poetic justice to this. But I always consider the actors when I'm writing. And I really don't like plays which waste actors. And I just thought, if you've got one male actor, he's going to be sitting in the green room evening after evening, and because he could only come in briefly at the end. I thought, well, that's not much fun for anyone. And it doesn't need it. In fact, it makes the point much more strongly if you have it completely, you know, if it is an all-women cast. But I think that's another sort of aspect of the intriguing nature of it. You know, I think that will also help bring in audiences in, just to see, you know, this rather unusual spectacle of such a large female cast.
Mm. So just to clarify, what was it a conscious choice to write it specifically for an all-female cast?
Yes. The story itself, the main story about the two women in a women's college, was very clearly a women's story. Mm. Then the French Revolution, there's a whole story of women in the French Revolution, which has been written about, you know, by experts, but it's not so widely known. And I wanted to bring some of that out. And then when I was looking for, that third modern period to sort of add on top, again, the 1960s, there are various reasons for choosing that. If you make it too modern, you get mobiles and laptops, and that's really difficult on stage. So 60s, 70s, 80s is a much better period to go for. I tend to be guided by the music. I'd done one in the 70s, so I thought, let's give the 60s a run. But actually, it worked out very well, because, again, you could have, you know, they're all of them periods of apparent liberation for women. the 60s, suffragette period, the French Revolution with rights of, you know, rights and equality being declared. But actually, that's a bit of an illusion. And that becomes a theme. So therefore, yes, it was very much a story as much about women in a men's world as it is about the ghosts. And therefore, it was a conscious decision that, you know, as I say, I did briefly consider putting one man in, and I thought, no, let's make this absolutely a women's story with an all female cast.
Yeah, I mean, I think that probably adds to the intrigue a little bit more as well. I do want to just pick you up on something else you mentioned earlier. I mean, obviously, you've touched on it spanning different time periods. It's really just a little bit about logistics now, because, of course, spanning time periods, to what degree has that had an effect on the production in terms of sort of set and costume design?
Oh, yes. So Sean set a real challenge for the set designer. I'm not going to give anything away, but some of the things he asked for were, how on earth do we make that happen? We have an amazing set designer. He's a member of the wonderful Penguin Club. So they're the people who provide backstage services for drama groups in Cambridge. They're just fantastic. And he designed the set for the last play I did of Sean's, which again was quite challenging. And he's come up with a really neat solution. And the costume designer, we've got a fantastic costume designer, and she came on board because she was so intrigued by the story and the fact that it was in three different time periods. But yeah, she's had her work cut out to source costumes, 13 actors, and some of them doubling. So there are lots and lots of costumes to source. It's going to look amazing. And we've got wonderful lighting designer and sound designer, because, of course, they're all elements that make up the world of the play. And although it's got ghosts in it and it's time travel, it's still got to be real within the parameters of the stage world. So they're all really important elements, but that's what makes making a play so exciting, because it's not just one or two people doing it. It's a whole group of people with different skills and talents and ideas, creative ideas, and just putting it all together is really, really exciting. Mm.
When at the beginning, where I was sort of meeting the lighting and the sound and the costumes people, and it was wonderful because they were seeing things in the script that I was only sort of vaguely aware of myself. And I particularly remember talking with Haya, isn't it, the costume. And, you know, she had sort of had an understanding of the characters and therefore the sort of the colour schemes and the design and what have you. It wasn't just a question of saying, oh, we need a 1900s dress or anything like that. It was much more analytical than that. And it was great sort of talking. And she had one or two questions for me about, you know, what was the intention here in order to reflect it in the choice of costume. And, you know, if you get those elements right, that's what really makes the difference between, you know, a good production and a really good production, an excellent one.
Oh, fantastic. And moving away from the play and onto your own sort of backgrounds in theatre. Now, I appreciate we may be looking at this from different perspectives, but was there anything in particular which drew your interest into the theatre?
I've done theatre ever since I was at school. I mean, obviously there was school theatre, but I also was a member of a couple of youth theatres as well. So and was very sort of properly trained, I think, in the youth theatre I was in. And my history is the thing I do as it were for a living, you know. But it's more than that, because I sort of think naturally in terms of time, in terms of past and present. And all the theatre writing I do, and I've done quite a lot of it in Cambridge, is either actually set in the past, in other words, a straightforward sort of historical drama, or it's about the sort of interplay of past and present, about the sort of way in which the past impinges on people in the present, or sort of casts its shadow or anything like that. So that whole sort of interplay of us and the past, which is part of what I do, you know, as a historian and as a history teacher, is absolutely central to the way I approach theatre as well. And I like to use theatre to explore the way in which the past has a hold on people in the present and can never entirely be escaped from. So to me, it's a sort of, marrying of the two main things in my sort of working life, which are history and theatre.
Yeah, no, I always wanted to be an actor from as long as I could remember. So I went to drama school. I went to the Royal Welsh College of Music and Drama a very long time ago, in the days when you didn't pay fees and you got a grant. And then I moved to London and I worked as a professional actor for about 10 years. And then I'm not going to say I drifted out. I realised that I was not going to be making a living doing this. So I walked away from it and I did lots of other things. Then I moved to Cambridge. I went to work for John Lewis, and the local John Lewis had a drama group. And I hadn't done anything. Once I'd walked away from it, I found it a bit painful to sort of have any sort of involvement. But then my boss at John Lewis was a member of the drama group, and he persuaded me to get involved. And then I was persuaded to direct a piece for them. And it had never occurred to me that I could or would direct something. But I loved it. It's like bringing a book to life. And that was it. Then I was thoroughly hooked back in. So I've directed quite a few shows with local groups. I've acted quite a lot with local groups. And I love every moment of it. I don't know what else to say about it.
Yeah, it's rather surprising to hear John Lewis reigniting your passion for theatre.
I know. And, I went to John Lewis just temporarily, and I ended up staying for 20 years and getting back into local theatre. So what a great move that was.
And moving on to what you've seen, I mean, don't suspect you've had too much time lately, but is there anything you've seen recently that has impressed you?
Yeah, I do like to get to as much as I can, not least, to encourage, because I like to support other groups. And also, of course, you have an eye open for good actors. I was very taken with A Few Good Men, which was on just recently at the ADC. In fact, Sarah and I were both at the same performance. That was a very powerful piece. And in fact, it set me thinking it's about time I wrote a courtroom drama, because I haven't done that really. And I enjoyed the Arts Theatre Murder in the Dark, which I thought was, again, it was a sort of ghost story there and quite an intriguing one. And I'm looking forward to Busman's Honeymoon, which is coming up next week at the ADC. So, yes, I certainly do sort of keep an eye. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Few Good Men was absolutely outstanding. Really was. I saw Hamnet in London recently, and I much preferred A Few Good Men. I thought it was so much better, so much more interesting and engaging. And I was with my partner, and he said, who needs to go to London when you've got this on your doorstep? So shout out to Corkscrew Theatre Company. That was amazing.
That's entirely what my podcast is aimed at, really, is encouraging people to visit their local theatres and see what's going on there, because there's such high quality theatre on people's doorsteps. So it's great to hear a shout out for Corkscrew there. What's next for you both? For you, Sarah, have you got a show lined up to direct or to play a part in? And for you, Sean, are you working on anything that you're hoping will make it to the stage soon?
Yes, I have got one or two, actually. I've got another sort of ensemble one, which is set in the 18th century and deals with a little known aspect of the slave trade. And actually grew out of a piece I originally wrote for Write On, the local sort of theatre writers group. And we're putting in for that to be done at the Junction, possibly this summer. And I've also done my own adaptation of A Christmas Carol, which we're hoping to do at Christmas. And I've also got totally different, because those are, plays with lots of characters, but much smaller scale. I've got a sort of three-person play, which is a sort of Nazi war crimes one set in England during the power cuts in the 1970s. You see what I mean about using the past, which I'd very much like to get put on. And a one-woman play called The Last Queen of Norwich, which, again, these are two I want to... plans to get those on as well. So yes, quite a bit happening.
And for you, Sarah?
So I one of the companies I work with a lot is Cambridge Theatre Company, and I might be doing something quite exciting with them next year, but it's still very much up in the air. But if it comes off, it will be terrific. Otherwise, no, I directed something just before Christmas, my first ever musical. So I'm looking forward to a bit of a rest and going and seeing stuff.
What was the musical you directed?
Beauty and the Beast by Cambridge Theatre Company, the Youth Theatre Company. That was at the ADC.
Not the Disney version?
It wasn't the Disney version. No, it wasn't. It was great. It was great fun.
Just back to the ghostly gift of Miss Constance Cooper. I guess I should ask, when and where is it on?
It's at the ADC Theatre. It's on from Tuesday the 16th of April to Saturday the 20th, 7:45 in the evenings, but with a 2:30 matinee on the Saturday as well.
Fantastic. Well, thank you both for speaking to me. I wish you the best with the run, and obviously I hope it's well received.
Thank you very
thank
much.
You. Thank you.
So there we have it. That was Sean and Sarah of the Combined Actors of Cambridge talking about The Ghostly Gift of Miss Constance Cooper. If you'd like to see this brand new production from a top-class company, as they mentioned, it's on at the ADC Theatre in Cambridge between the 16th and 20th of April, with a matinee on the 20th. Tickets are available via adctheatre.com. Now, what else is coming up in the region over the next few weeks? Well, I'll start close to home for me, and the Sewell Barn Theatre has a production of a play called Betty and Joan, which opens on the 18th of April. It's a two-woman show where the actors portray Betty Davis and Joan Crawford, their difficult relationship and their even more difficult personal lives in early years. I'm going along to give it a review on the opening night, but if you like the sound of it, it's at the Sewell Barn on the 18th, 19th and 20th of April, and then again the following week from the 24th to the 27th, with the matinee on the Saturday. Tickets are available via sewellbarn.org. Also in Norwich, the Suffolk-based comedy improv group Insert Laughter Here are playing a night at the Maddermarket Theatre. They're bringing their brand of chaotic silliness to the theatre on the 26th of April. Unfortunately, I won't get to see that show as I'll be in Copenhagen, but if you'd like to go along, tickets are available via maddermarket.co.uk. Over in Suffolk, the Regal in Stowmarket is playing host to the latest production from the Stowmarket Operatic and Dramatic Society, which is called Sunshine Unleath and features songs by the Proclaimers. It centres around the lives of Davy and Ali, who have returned from serving in Afghanistan and have to learn to adjust to civilian life. It's described as a musical full of laughter and tears as the two young men begin to create new lives for themselves. You can catch it from the 17th to the 20th of April with a matinee on the Saturday, and you can visit regalstowmarket.co.uk for more details and tickets. And finally, back in Cambridgeshire, Campaign Amateur Theatre, based in Ely, is on the lookout for auditionees for their November production of the Monty Python musical Spamalot. The auditions are set to take place on the afternoon of Sunday the 14th and the evening of Wednesday the 17th of April. And anyone interested should contact the director, Steph Peachy, via email. The address is steph.peachy, and that's Peachy, P-E-A-C-H-E-Y, steph.peachy1@gmail.com. And that, folks, is all I have time for. As usual, I'll feature links for all the shows and auditions mentioned on my social media pages throughout the coming weeks. Do get in touch if you want me to feature your show, or indeed if you want to ruin a half hour by chatting to me for the podcast. Anyhow, thanks so much for listening to me, Sean and Sarah ramble on, and tune in next time when I'll be chatting to a man of the cloth. Intrigued? Well, make sure you keep an ear out for that one. In the meantime, take care of yourselves and go watch some theatre. Bye.